That is a hard act to follow. That was excellent. Thank you. I was actually going to start with something a little serious, which is to say, you know, well, first of all, to say it's been wonderful talking to everybody in the breaks and getting to know you. And one of the things that people say to me often, wherever I go, is, boy, I'm so angry that there's just this incredible lie. How do I live with this lie about everything that I've been told for so long? And that is, of course, one of the things that we, you know, how do you deal with that? You know, actually, I was going to call my book the Big Fat Lie, and then we thought, well, that's too aggressive. Let's call it the Big Fat Surprise. But no matter what you call it, surprise, misrepresentation, alt fact. You know, in nutrition science, we've been living this for in this world. We've all been living this alt fact thing. This is nothing new. So. I just want to look straight in the camera right now to the YouTube audience and say thank you to the thousands of people who have come out here to hear me speak today. I really appreciate the huge crowd that I see before me. anyway, okay, let's get down to the science now. So I'm going to talk about vegetable oils. What are vegetable oils? These are vegetable oils, the ones that are most commonly known, really. Soybean oil is the one that is really the main contributor to the oils we eat. And they're not really vegetable oils. I mean, it sounds so lovely, doesn't it? You know, I always wonder about what PR room came up with the word vegetable oils. They're not made from vegetable oils. Vegetables, like broccoli or anything, they're made from seeds and beans. They actually should be called seed oils, amongst technical vegetable oil scientists, that's actually what they call them among themselves. Of course, they're not natural. These are the natural fats that humans ate for millennia. There's tallow, which comes from cows, and suet from lambs. Lard, these are really the two main ones that were used in cooking in the West. Lard from pigs and, of course, butter. In other societies, in Asian societies, they also used coconut oil and palm oil. Those are traditional fats. We know they're traditional from in the Odyssey. Athena says she lays down a fat goat and the chine of a great wild hog rich in lard for Odysseus, obviously to kill him. So vegetable oils of any kind, were really not used for human consumption. They were used for industrial machinery as lubricants. In the Industrial Revolution, I mean, first it was really whale oil from the 1820s to the 1860s, and they were used for machinery. And then when we killed all the whales, we moved over to cottonseed oil, which was a byproduct of... You know, the cotton was a huge crop in the southern United States, and they didn't know what to do with the leftover oil, so they started using that to replace whale oil. And it was not a food. This oil was used a little bit in the late 1800s to adulterate butter, to kind of sneak it in, but here's the problem with oils and human consumption. They are not stable. They're greasy and oily, so this is just to show you the chemistry. A saturated fatty acid has no double bonds in there between the carbon molecules, and so it's straight. A double bond makes a chink in the chain, but if it's saturated, meaning it's saturated with hydrogens, there are no double bonds. So that's straight and flat, and those molecules can sit on top of each other all together, and there's no space between them, and so they make solids. Saturated fats are solid. Whereas unsaturated fatty acids, this is a polyunsaturated fatty acid. Poly means multiple double bonds between the carbons. And they're unsaturated because if you broke this bond and put, you could add hydrogens here. So it's not saturated with hydrogens. And those molecules don't lie flat together. They're all squiggly and wiggly. And so there's space between them, and therefore they're oils. That's the basic chemistry. So in order to use oils as foodstuff, they had to make them straight. And they did this through a process called hydrogenation. So they took oleic acid. This is the one of the polyunsaturated fats. Actually, that's not polyunsaturated fat. That's a monounsaturated fat. But anyway, the idea is they straighten it out through a process called hydrogenation. And hydrogenation is a very complex process that involves all kinds, you know, in huge factory. I actually have been in a hydrogenation factory, and you know, there's just floors and floors of machinery, and they use metal catalyst and the hexane solvent, and then they go through this incredibly long process, because really when you take seeds or beans and you press them, what comes out is this rancid gray liquid, and then you have to make that palatable. So you have to deodorize it and winterize it so it's stable, and you have to go through all these steps. You don't churn it, and you don't milk it from a cow and churn it. So it's a lot more complicated. But this is that process is what allowed vegetable oils to come into the food supply. And that happened because once it could be stabilized, actually, when they first stabilized, this is Procter & Gamble, who were originally soap makers and tallow makers. And when they first stabilized cottonseed oil in the early 1900s, about 1910 or so, when this process was discovered, they looked at that and they said, oh, we'll sell that as soap. And actually, a lot of your soaps are made from oils. That's what's, you know, a lot of soaps are. And then they looked at it and they said, well, that actually looks a lot like lard. Why don't we try to sell it as lard? So, and this is in 1911. So they figured that out, and they had a number of names for. They eventually landed on this idea of Crisco, and that was the introduction of vegetable oils as a commercial product into the human food supply, really. That was really the beginning of it as a commercial product. And they were brilliant about how they went about marketing this product. And they did it, you have to understand, you know, in America, in the early 1900s, particularly in America, everybody wanted the new, well, almost every society, everybody wants the new and the modern. And so this was, they would market Crisco as something, I'm going to quote now, that comes from the book of Crisco. While Crisco may be a shock to the older generation born in an age less progressive than our own, it is a modern woman is glad to give up butter and lard, just as her grandmother, quote, her grandmother was happy to forego the fatiguing spinning wheel. So it was like supposed to be a liberation. It was also marketed in contrast to the always sort of sordid conditions of animal slaughter and extraction of animal fats. But Crisco was made in sparkling bright rooms and clean countertops and chemistry labs. And they white, and quote, white enamel covers metal surfaces to contrast it to the conditions of making animal fats. So, and it was incredibly successful. I mean, they sold cookbooks and all kinds of pamphlets, and they marketed it. And at the end, they said, you know, and in every cookbook in America, butter is crossed out, and Crisco is put. And butter and lard are crossed out, and Crisco is put in its place. And that is what happened. At about the same time, margarine also entered. Margarine is also hardened vegetable oils, Originally, margarine, very early on, it used to be made with lard and coconut oil, which are solid, stable fats. But by 1958, it was made entirely from polyunsaturated fats. And it was a huge threat to the dairy industry. If you want any insight into why, one of the reasons it took me so long to write a book is that, you know, I spent like 3 months completely obsessed with margarine there was this whole incredible chapter of the dairy industry trying to prevent the margarine industry from entering in, and so they had all kinds of taxes and restrictions, and you couldn't sell yellow margarine, you had to only sell it as white, and then you would get a little color capsule that you would knead into it to make it yellow to look like butter. And these are angry housewives protesting that they want their margarine, because of course vegetable oils were very quickly cheaper. They were just cheaper, so housewives wanted them. And eventually it became accepted really in World War II, when even wealthy women wanted to save money, and it was considered okay then to put margarine on an elegant table. And so that was sort of the end of margarine restrictions. So these are so Crisco and margarine are the main ways that vegetable oils entered into our food supply. And that all happened, really they were introduced and solidly in the food supply by the mid-20th century. So and then when did oil as oil come in? This actually happened in the 1940s because they had figured out, by 1940, they had figured out how to stabilize oil just enough to sell it in a bottle. Remember, oils are rancid products. They oxidize really easily. They go rancid and bad. They have no shelf life stability, but they figured out a little chemical fix in the 1940s, and so now they were able to sell it as oils. And then they, of course, as we know, they got a huge boost when the American Heart Association started recommending polyunsaturated vegetable oils to replace saturated fats. And this was a tremendous boost to the vegetable oil industry. As we know, that was all part of Ansel Keys' diet heart hypothesis. We said saturated fats and cholesterol cause heart disease. And that happened in response to the tremendous panic over the rising tide of heart disease, with President Eisenhower himself having a heart attack in 1955 and being out of the Oval Office for 10 whole days. Just imagine your president is out of the office with, you know, for 10 days. I mean, like, the nation was in a tremendous panic. And it was into that vacuum of understanding about what causes heart disease that Ansel Keys stepped. And this is just my chart to show you what an incredibly ludicrous idea it was at the time that President Eisenhower's heart attack was caused by saturated fats, already declining in the food supply. What was perfectly rising in lockstep with heart disease was unsaturated vegetable oils. So how crazy to think that you would solve a condition with the food that had been just invented and seemed to be perfectly correlated with heart disease. Anyway, and there's also a really interesting backstory about how the American Heart Association had really had deep, deep ties with the vegetable oil industry, and in fact had been launched by Procter & Gamble, a vegetable oil, that one of their products was Crisco. You know, Procter & Gamble, original maker of Crisco. So, and this is a story that I tell in my book that the American Heart Association, you understand, because heart disease really only was rare until the late 1920s. The American Heart Association, you know, cardiologists was a relatively small little specialty, and they were not a big group, and they had an office, a small office, and almost no money. The American Heart Association really was nothing to look at until Procter & Gamble came along in 1948, and they designated them to be the recipient of this Jack Benny radio show contest. It was called the Walking Men Contest, where all the proceeds from the show went to the American Heart Association. And as the American Heart Association's own history book reads, it says, "And overnight, millions poured into our coffers as the Procter & Gamble man, they had a dinner, celebrated, and handed us the check. And overnight, they became a huge, massive nonprofit organization. They're still the biggest nonprofit in the U.S. today, all thanks to their launch by Procter & Gamble, whom they paid off, I think, very well. And because they were recommending Crisco products. In fact, there's a story that I don't have the picture of it, but there's a story of I have a letter from a scientist complaining to Campbell Moses, who is the president of the American Heart Association in the 1960s, saying, Campbell, I can't believe the rank commercialism of your posing in that film with your face next to a bottle of Crisco oil. And I won't participate if you continue to do that. So the American Heart Association, what this enabled the vegetable oil industry to do was to market itself basically as a health food, you know, as a food that you can eat in order to avoid a heart attack. These are some more ads. Take this ad to your doctor so they can prescribe vegetable oils to you. And here's margarine because of course your 8-year-old should worry about cholesterol. That ad actually became the subject of a whole lawsuit, and it was eventually banned because there was no evidence, and still is no evidence, that high cholesterol in children has anything to do with heart disease, except for in rare genetic cases. Let's see. Testing the diet heart hypothesis. This is just to let you know that that this whole idea that replacing saturated fats with polyunsaturated fats has been tested in large randomized controlled clinical trials on more people than have ever been tested on any other hypothesis in the world in nutrition science. And the results, large, well-controlled trials and which are the gold standard of evidence, and they have shown no effect of saturated fat on any cardiovascular mortality or total mortality. So that knowledge is part of the alt-fat world that we live in, which is that nobody talks about that. So one of the reasons I wanted to bring up those studies is that in those trials, where they tended to replace regular fats with like lard and meat, and then they would replace those with vegetable oils, right? So in effect, what you're studying a number of things in those trials, but one of the things you're studying is, well, what is the effect of having a high vegetable oil diet? If you have a lot of corn oil and soybean oil, what happens? Well, in nearly a dozen of these studies, they found a number of worrisome things, including that in all the experimental groups, they died at higher rates of cancer. So this is the LA Veterans study, where the men ate diets high in soy, corn, safflower, cottonseed oil. 6 years of this wasn't a perfect trial. They didn't control for smoking, say. But it was successful. I mean, one of the markers of a successful trial is that the men did successfully lower their cholesterol, as they did in all the diet heart trials, but they died at more than twice the rate of the control group from cancer. And that was found in another trials as well. They also had two times higher rates of gallstones. Gallstones was found in another cholesterol-lowering trial. So maybe it's the vegetable oils, maybe it's the cholesterol-lowering, we don't know. Strokes also found in people who have much higher rates than people who have lower cholesterol. And in fact, the Pure study that just came out recently, which was the largest ever epidemiological study ever undertaken, they found that the saturated fat you ate, the people who ate the lowest amount of saturated fat had the highest risk of stroke. So whether or not that's the low amount of saturated fats or the high amount of vegetable oils they're eating or the low cholesterol, we don't know. But that's a disturbing finding that is clearly now echoing through this work. Also possible cirrhosis of the liver that was found in more than just that study there. So worrisome side effects of switching your diet over to vegetable oils from saturated fats, and was in fact so worrisome that the NIH had a series of high-level meetings on this, at which people like Ansel Keys and his buddies were all invited to try to figure out what was going on with these trials, why the higher rates of cancer and gallstones. And they had, so this is 3 separate years they had these meetings, and they had various ideas. They thought that maybe low cholesterol was a sign of getting cancer. Anyway, in the end, they just decided that lowering cholesterol was too important. Heart disease was too important to fight heart disease, and they didn't want any kind of other message getting in the way of their cholesterol lowering advice. So, but this just shows you the rise in vegetable oils over the course. It is the food group that has, more than any other food group, it has risen the most. So it's like our consumption of it has gone from 0 to 7 to 8% of all calories that we consume in the U.S., which is just like 121,000 times more than we ate in 1900. And now it's mostly soybean oil. So why do we have this astronomic rise? Well, obviously there's the fact that the American Heart Our Heart Association is supporting this idea. Then the U.S. Dietary Guidelines get on board, and they say replace your saturated fats with polyunsaturated vegetable oils. Although it doesn't say that quite there, but it does. And then there's that hydrogenated oil becomes the backbone of the food industry. So, you know, almost every food in these supermarket aisles is comprised of, you know, usually it's mainly like some sugar, grain, and then they need a fat. You need a fat to make any cookie, cracker, crisp, anything. And that fat is hydrogenated soybean oil. That's just always the way it was. And because it's cheap, it's easy to manipulate. And so every one of these products contains hydrogenated oils, or did until quite recently. These are the natural alternatives. So these are the non-animal based natural alternatives that can also be used by food manufacturers, and indeed were for a good part, up until the 80s, these were used by food companies in their products. But they're healthier because they're more stable. And because they're solid fat, they're naturally solid. They don't have to go through that hydrogenation process to become solid. But these were scared out of the U.S. food supply because for a number of reasons that are really fascinating. One was the American Soybean Association recognized that the tropical oils were a threat to them, and so they came up with this idea. This is Steve Drake, who is the head of the American Soybean Association. When they were doing this whole campaign from 1986 to 1989, and they distributed all these fat fighter kits, that what you don't know about tropical oils will kill you. And they pictured like sleazy Asians with cigars saying, like, you know, putting the wholesome American farmer out of business. And then they came up with the term tree lard, which sounds really appealing and definitely had an effect. And I just put this up because I see echoes of this really in this recent, a couple people have mentioned this recent American Heart Association presidential advisory. They focus quite a lot on coconut oil. Like, why are they focusing on coconut oil? This is in their heart news, which I just have to say as an aside, like, here they're creating the controversy, and then here they're saying, why all the hubbub over the controversy we're creating? That's just such a classic tactic. They really emphasize coconut oil. Coconut oil does not have any different kind of saturated fats than any of the other saturated fats that have all been tested in those randomized controlled clinical trials, finding no effect on mortality. So why are they focusing on coconut oil? Well, you know, it may be that they receive lots of money. This is just one of the things that I happened to found because it actually was somebody who was stupid enough to put this on the web. But, you know, they get a lot of money from soybean companies, vegetable oil companies, and so maybe that's the reason. Maybe coconut oil is still a threat to them. Coconut oil has certainly experienced a real resurgence. Tropical oils have experienced a resurgence in the U.S. Back in the 80s, another reason that we saw a rise in polyunsaturated hydrogenated oils is that there was this passionate Nebraska millionaire, Philip Sokoloff, who took out all these ads. He really believed that tropical oils were killing people. He was one of those passionate, uninformed people. And we are not going to name any names right now. But, you know, we all know them. And he went on this. He just spent all his money. He had suffered a heart attack, thought that going on a prudent plant-based diet was what saved him. And now he was going to save the rest of America. And he took out all these ads, and he had everybody call every executive at all the major food companies, and that had an extraordinary effect of, you know, all of our big food companies, Nabisco, Kraft, everybody just pulling out all their palm oil and coconut oil and switching over to hydrogenated polyunsaturated oils. So, and then there's also our friends CSPI. For those of you who saw my talk yesterday, they're the ones who were in charge of the retraction letter. Always on the right side of science, and they were saying they've always been against saturated fats, and they were pushing trans fats, and they did this particularly in movie theaters, getting rid of any kind of butter pop popcorn or coconut oil pop popcorn, and they got rid of all the fats in restaurants and all the fryers. So this meant that there was, by the end of the 1980s, all the fats used in restaurants, in processing, in food service, in cafeterias, everywhere was hydrogenated vegetable oils. And I'm sure it's a similar situation for in this country and others. But then, partially hydrogenated vegetable oils contain trans fats. And these are some of the original researchers who were interested and involved in figuring out, understanding trans fats and understanding their role and why they were potentially a danger to health. And so, not due to their work, but eventually when Harvard caught whiff of it and Harvard decided to get involved, then the FDA decided to ban trans fats. And I don't know what the situation is with trans fats here, but it's not bad. It's not banned. So, I'll just tell you a little story about it. Trans fats were banned because they slightly raise LDL cholesterol. So we all know what we think of LDL cholesterol. And I don't think that was a correct reason for banning them. They were also banned largely on the basis of epidemiological data. However, trans fats, those other researchers I just showed you, they did find a number of other disturbing health effects of trans fats, which makes me not sorry they're banned, even if it was for the wrong reasons. But the problem is, what replaces trans fats? This is a huge issue. And again, they are, you know, you have to remember, this is the polyunsaturated molecule, not stable. It's not stable unless it's hydrogenated. So still not stable. If you can't hydrogenate it, it's not a stable molecule. And so vegetable oil companies started going back to all their chemistry labs and figuring out, well, what were they going to use? They needed a newfangled something or other to replace hydrogenated fats. And this is what they've come up with. So they've genetically modified soybeans to produce less of the particular fatty acids that seem to cause rancidity, like linoleic, linolenic. They've tried to change the expression of those particular fatty acids. A lot more sunflower oil, which is naturally a little more stable, has come out because it's higher in some monounsaturated fats. And then they've made this thing called interesterified oils, which where they take each triglyceride, you know, in a fatty acid, they have triglycerides, they swap around the actual carbon molecules. And anyway, that is, who knows what that is? And, you know, probably another trans fats in 20 years' time. But all of these are expensive options. What we really should do is just go back to using saturated fats, right? We should just go back to using lard and tallow and suet, natural, non-oxidizing. But we can't because our dietary guidelines put a limit on saturated fat. So that's why we have in all of our restaurants still, you know, they're just using the cheapest option. So this is what I wanted to say, which is the other way in which we talk about the polyunsaturated fats is that these are omega-6s. That's another way you might have heard of them. And they are, omega-6s are known to be, have inflammatory effects, right? And part of the reason for just showing you this chart is that you get some omega-6s in nuts and in other places. Most of them come from vegetable oils. And probably some of you've heard of the omega-3, omega-6 ratio. You're supposed to keep that ratio relatively high in omega-3s and relatively low in omega-6s. And people are always telling you, spend a lot of money on omega-3s to get that ratio up. Well, you're never going to have, or maybe some of you do, but you can. It's really, if you're eating a lot of vegetable oils, you're going to be spending a fortune in your omega-3s to get your omega-3s ratio up. The best way to get that ratio, if you believe in it, in good shape, is to just not have omega-6s. Keep your omega-6s down. And even healthy people who tend to binge on nuts might be having too many omega-6s. So you do have to watch out for that, especially with all these new nut flours around that people are baking with. So it's just something to be aware of. This is to show you what is happening in restaurant fryers across the country, is that they've just gone back to regular soybean oil, corn oil. And this is another thing, I bring this up also for this crowd who probably is, you know, very health conscious, but you may not know what your oil, the restaurant that you go to is frying in. And I know in America, all the McDonald's, every fast food chain, and really it's not even the fast food chains that, you know, which probably you avoid, but, you know, every mom and pop restaurant where they have fried food, they're frying in just regular oils. And I don't think I have time to go into the whole story of how scary heated vegetable oils are. And I'm not, you know, flogging my book, but I will tell you at the end of chapter 9, should you choose to if you want to get it, it really has the whole incredible story that I came across. These are just some of the toxic oxidation products that are in heated oils and the kinds of effects that they have. One of the aldehydes is a formal marker for your cancer, for cancer risk. And aldehydes are created
are just created in huge amounts in when they fry food in polyunsaturated oils. And there was a woman in who did an experiment where she just went to her local McDonald's and started, you know, measuring the aldehydes in the fried chicken nuggets and the French fries, and she found hundreds of all kinds of oxidation products, but very high levels of these aldehydes. They are really terrifying, and you know, the way I came across this whole story was that I actually, you know, if you spend enough time talking to vegetable oil scientists, as I have done, they, you know, one of them said, you know, he said, you know what's going on in the restaurants, don't you? He says, ever since they've gone to these trans-free oils, they have been having these horrible cleaning problems. They understand them as cleaning problems because the fryers are getting clogged. Because the oils turn into polymers when they go through all this heated. That long molecule I showed you becomes degraded and broken up, and it changes into other kinds of polymers, and that, like the polymers in paint, right? So they would clog up the drains, and they would have this gooey, sticky stuff on the walls, and they would try to scrape it off, and nobody could scrape it off, so they had to invent a new cleaner that was extra strong, that had sort of extra strength chemicals in it, that to use to try to depolymerize the stuff on the walls and in the drains and on the floors of all these fast food places. He said the polymers, these degraded molecules were so unstable that when they would put the uniforms in the backs of trucks to go take them to the cleaners, the uniforms would spontaneously combust. And then when they took them, they'd clean them, and they put them in the dryers. There were still so many of these toxic chemicals in them that they would explode in the dryers. So, I mean, just imagine, we're just all putting this in our bodies. And that is why, you know, McDonald's used to fry their French fries in tallow, right? And I'm sure, and actually, and I've always thought, oh, they must taste a lot better, and in fact, Malcolm Gladwell, who's a famous writer and now does a podcast and did this episode based really entirely on my book, one of the things he did was he went to McDonald's and he had them do some French fries in tallow and then had a taste test with everybody in the room. And it was like, hands down, 100% tastier were the tallow French fries. And I hope one day I can try some tallow French fries. I just want to say something about olive oil, because everybody asks me about this. Olive oil is a little different from a polyunsaturated seed oil because it only has one double bond, so it's a monounsaturated fat. So again, you think of a double bond as something that can open up and grab an oxygen, and that's oxidation, which causes inflammation. If you've only got one double bond, you've only got one hand out there, one other oxygen. So it's a bit more stable. And in the number of the experiments where they've looked at what happens when you heat oils, the most oxidation products, toxic oxidation products, are produced with polyunsaturated fats because they have the most bonds that can open up. There's a kind of olive oil is kind of in between range. And the lowest oxidation products are, of course, with saturated fats, which have no double bonds. But monounsaturated fats are sort of in between there. And that's why I say for salad dressings, use olive oil, right? Any non-heated application, sound like a food executive. Anything you're doing to cook in the kitchen, use olive oil if you're not going to heat it. Don't use any polyunsaturated fats, and that includes canola oil, which is maybe is a little bit of a better blend, but still it's got polyunsaturates in there. And for cooking, really just use saturated fats. Try to say the word lard and not feel disgusted. And then buy some lard, which is like fantastic to cook with. When I started cooking with lard, I couldn't get over like how flaky, well, we don't make pie crust anymore, but you know, really wonderful it is to cook with. And avoid fried food in restaurants, unless you really know that they're you know, unless you found the restaurant that cooks with tallow again. And this is, of course, entirely in contrast to everything that your experts are telling you, which is to replace saturated fats with polyunsaturated fatty acids. And, you know, I mean, at this point, this recommendation now really is just hanging by a thread. And what they've done is they've really ignored all those randomized controlled clinical trials, which are the gold standard of evidence. And they're trying to, especially, again, coming out of Harvard, like endless studies based on their epidemiological data, a weaker, very weak kind of data, to try to support this policy recommendation. So that's it. You know, these are just some pictures to show you ancient foods. We can, you know, these are traditional fats. They're lovely. They taste good. And like Belinda and Gary, you can even fall in love forever eating lard. I bet you they're good singers too. Anyway, thank you.